We're back with the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast on the planet that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 78, we feature our opinions on the World Cup coverage from Telemundo and Fox Sports, as well as ESPN. What changes Fox has made this week that could be the turning point in their coverage of Copa Mundial, and most importantly, tons and tons of letters from you, the listeners. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined by my co-host Kartik Krishnaya. Kartik, 1 week into the World Cup, let's jump in right here, because this is going to be interesting, because how many minutes or how much coverage of Fox's World Cup campaign have you seen?
Very little. I listened to none. There have been times that in my office, the television has been turned on Fox, and I've watched it for a few minutes before getting the television switched to Telemundo, but basically zero.
And this, for me too, is also, I mean, I've been watching Fox and Telemundo. I've been switching back and forth. We'll get into that in a little bit. This is the first World Cup I've watched this much Spanish language television of the World Cup. How about you? What about previous years of...
I never watched Univision in the previous years. Now, right. I'm thinking maybe I should have, so I have a basis to compare Telemundo's coverage to, but at the time we had ESPN, who was really good. You know, going back to 2006, I probably should have tried it, but I didn't, because it was just old habit then to watch ESPN. But 10 and 14, ESPN's coverage was so good, there was no temptation to ever switch to Univision.
Right. And just as in last week's podcast, too, we're going to talk about the positives from Fox and Telemundo, as well as some of the negatives. So we're going to be fair and balanced. But Kartik, first question for me would be is, why aren't you watching Fox? Why are you watching Telemundo?
Because Fox, leading into this World Cup, was very patronizing. They were very... to me, basic in their analysis, and everything I've heard from people, there's so many of you that listen to the show that are in touch with me and have been messaging me in the last week complaining about Fox's coverage and have sort of reinforced this view. There's always the context of trying to compare things to the U.S. national team or build up the U.S. national team, and then there was the campaign, and that's the only thing I can call it, because now we know it was a paid campaign also to push American viewers towards supporting Mexico. Now, I will admit, I was very thrilled with Mexico's win over Germany. I was rooting for Mexico like any El Tri fan would, but that was against Germany. I'm not going to root for them against South Korea or Sweden. You don't root for Germany unless you're German, because they're one of the big teams in international football. So, but yeah, the patronizing attitude, I think that the low caliber of their analysts in their ability to break down things tactically, to understand... have broader perspectives about this sport than just viewing everything through the lens of Americanism or insecurity, because a lot of U.S. soccer fans are insecure about the U.S.'s place in the global game and on the men's side. Women's side, obviously, the U.S. is fantastic and one of the leaders. But insecurity, and that comes through in the way Fox presents everything they do, including their pregame shows for the UEFA Champions League. So, look, my intention was to Fox, Chris, quite frankly. I just, what ended up happening is the last few weeks to build up was so so disappointing and annoying to my sensibilities that Thursday of last week rolled around the first day of the World Cup, and I decided, you know, I'm going to watch this match on Telemundo, the Russia-Saudi Arabia game. And the next morning, as the World Cup really off, right? And that was the day of Spain, Portugal. I'm thinking, yeah, I'm going to keep watching Telemundo. And I haven't stopped because they've been very good. And I've gotten the bumper program and analysis I needed in English from ESPN's array of programs, which I will admit have been a little hit or miss in terms of when they're on. But I've had no desire to watch Fox.
Yeah, with commentators and studio analysts, it's different strokes for different folks. And we all have our favorites and our preferred style of announcers and talent. But it's safe to say that there's been a tidal wave of criticism pointed at Fox Sports for the subpar analysis and subpar commentators. But none of us should really be surprised by any of this. We've seen this coming for months. For me personally, I started off with Fox, I think, on Wednesday with the preview show. Watched all day Thursday, all day Friday. And by midday Saturday. I think it was actually, no, maybe it was Friday. No, it was Saturday. After the Argentina-Iceland game, and with John Strong's call at the end of the game to say that Iceland beats Argentina 1-1, I was furious, because I was like, that's a ridiculous thing to say, first of all. Second of all, it puts all the talking points and exposure, it's all about him. It's all about Fox by him saying that. It got me really, really upset. So I posted on Twitter and said, asked the question, a rhetorical question really, is why would he say that? Why would he say that at the culmination of a great game, back and forth, in terms of the atmosphere, one of the best atmospheres in the World Cup thus far, with the Icelandic supporters and the Argentinian supporters, why would he say that? And it was interesting because the feedback I got, and this is obviously mostly American soccer fans that are following World Soccer Talk on Twitter, probably about 75% of them said, oh, he's talking about the USA-England game when they had the headline on the front of the page on the New York Post, I think it was, that said USA beats England 1-1. So the vast majority of people, myself included, didn't know what he was referring to. Then we had probably about 5 or 6 people said, like, no. What he's referring to is Harvard beat Yale or Yale beat Harvard, whatever it was. So it was a tie. And the person, a few of the people on Twitter said, well, it's pretty much only people who are 50 years or older that would understand that reference, which I think that's what it's back to. I think it's a college football game. But to me, it was like, why would you say that? Why would you make it all about you rather than just summing up the game? It was just really insane.
Chris, this is part of a narrative also that I think has been painted, not necessarily just by Fox, but by some American soccer writers and commentators, that Iceland is this massive Cinderella story, which they are. But Iceland has been good since 2013. They were very unlucky not to qualify for the 14 World Cup. They were they made the playoff. They got drawn with Croatia, who was really good at that point, who's pretty good again now. So they lost in the playoff. 2016, they go to the Euros. They get out of they finish ahead of Portugal in the group. Portugal, the eventual champions. They beat England in the knockout stages. They bow out to the hosts, France. And then this qualifying cycle, they finish ahead of Croatia, who we just mentioned is very good. They finished ahead of Turkey, and they finished ahead of Ukraine. They are more accomplished in the last 5 or 6 years of international football than the United States is. But yet there has to be this story about this is painting them as this huge underdog, et cetera, which they are. But let's now have some broader perspectives on what they've accomplished over the course of the last 5 or 6 years and treat them as if they belong in this tournament. To me, that was patronizing again.
Yeah.
Iceland beats Argentina. Well, if you compare the qualifying process for both countries, Iceland's was cleaner, and they were in a group, like I said, with Croatia and Ukraine and Turkey. They had to make road trips to Istanbul and Kiev and Zagreb, which, by the way, for the U.S. fan again, is tougher than going to these places in CONCACAF. American fans complain about the U.S. having to go to in Central America and the Caribbean. Argentina made a mess out of qualifying and needed really miracles from Messi to avoid being in that intercontinental playoff where they would have played New Zealand. Or maybe they wouldn't have qualified at all, actually. So I didn't see this as a huge upset. It would have been an upset maybe if Iceland had won the draw. I think that was probably the most likely result if you were objective about it coming into this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Iceland's a good team. I mean, they beat England in the Euros. I mean, they're a good team.
They're Portugal.
Right, and they got some good players. I mean, many of them we know that are playing in Europe and we see on television every weekend. I don't know. It was just a really dumb thing to say. So in terms of the coverage, Kartik, World Cup tonight with Fernando Fiore, I mean, the words you would use to kind of attach with this would be things like car crash, train wreck. I mean, absolutely horrible. I mean, this is an awful idea to have him do a late night show. It's unwatchable. I taped it last week. I missed the first night, went back and watched it, and just switched it off after about maybe 20 minutes. I've tuned in a few other times to tune in, and it's absolutely awful, horrendous. I'm not sure what they're thinking.
The best description I've heard about this show, and I have not watched a minute of it, so I have to admit this, is from a colleague of mine who compared it to Men in Blazers and said at least the Men in Blazers have some sort of shtick and some sort of trained comedy routine. And there's a clear disclaimer as to what it is versus this, which is a bad imitation of Men in Blazers, and it's ostensibly a highlight show or a wrap-up show of the day in the World Cup. So just take that. I thought that was a pretty good comparison.
Yeah.
Take that for what it's worth.
Well, there's another show, too, and most of the viewers, listeners, myself included, have not seen it. It's a show called World Cup Match Day, I believe it's called. And during the entire World Cup, it's going to air 6 times. So I think so far, I think it's aired 2 times. And I think it's actually on tonight, on Thursday, as we record the podcast. And I think a few more times during the World Cup. So it's very spread out, very sporadic. And that show, I've had raving reviews. I haven't seen it. I've heard from several people that this is the best thing that they've got. And it's hosted by Ian Joy and has Kobe Jones on it. And I forgot the third person on it. But what it is kind of a deep dive analysis into some of the talking points and the World Cup. And that's the one thing that we've been missing. I mean, to me, Ian Joy is invisible. He's in Russia. He's been hired to be a host. I guess he's hosting the show. Use him. I mean, bring him in onto the set as a studio analyst. Have him be a reporter outside the stadium talking to some of the fans. I mean, this is one of Fox's probably best assets, and you're not even using him. So that's the second show. And then you go into the studio analysis. And Kartik, I have to say, so up until, what was it, I think Saturday, probably midday Saturday, I switched over to Telemundo. From Saturday onwards, I've been watching Telemundo almost straight, except for now and again with Fox. But their studio analysis was absolutely awful. Gus Hiddink, who's, I'm sure, a nice guy, feels like it's like a grandfather, does not have a good command of the English language, and also it's not very direct. So, like, Rob Stone asked him in one of the segments, so what do you think about this Belgium side? Looking at this starting lineup, what do you think? What do you see that comes out of it? And then he went on this whole tangent and didn't even answer the question. And I'm sure Rob Stone is probably pulling his hair out, going, okay, I'm giving these guys questions, and they're not giving me back some salient answers that are going to, you mean, drive the conversation forward. Hernan Crespo can't even speak English that well, so it's very difficult to understand him. So he's pretty much been moved off the studio analysis. We'll have to wait and see if Gus Hiddink comes back. He's had a nasty cough. He sounds really sick. That hasn't helped things, too, just hearing coughing in the background. And then you had kind of the rotating cast of Kelly Smith, who's been very good. Ian Wright, who's been very inconsistent. At times he's been good, but other times he just looked like he's there for a laugh. And then Moises Munoz, who's been one of the better ones from Fox. But all in all, it's been awful. And now, Kartik, I have to ask you this question, because I know in terms of who you like and some of the styles that you like, and you may have heard that in the last 48 hours, Fox has brought in 2 brand new analysts to replace Lothar Matthäus, who mysteriously didn't even show up on set at all, even though he was billed as the lead Fox foreign analyst. It wasn't on the set for 1 minute, so who knows what happened there. Fox says it's due to schedule conflicts, which is kind of strange. But so the 2 people they've brought in, Clarence Seedorf and Martin O'Neill, would those 2 guys make you switch and go back and give Fox a chance?
Maybe. Clarence Seedorf, I have a great deal of respect for. I've seen him as a pundit before on UK television. He's done pretty well. Martin O'Neill, I watched just last week on a clip from him on ITV. In the build-up to the World Cup with him fighting with Cannavaro and someone else on set. But, you know, Martin O'Neill is a guy I like a lot. I mean, I think he's always been very blunt and direct. And he has a lot of Brian Clough, who he played for at Nottingham Forest, in him, which is why by the way, England didn't hire him when they should have hired him instead of Steve McClaren in 2006 after the 2006 World Cup. He's now coaching the Republic of Ireland, which is a national team in Europe I actually support. So, I'm actually tempted to watch one of their studio shows by Noel O'Neill and Seedorf will be on at the same time. But the fact that they had to go and hire these two guys, both of whom have a pedigree, obviously as a player, Seedorf is one of the most decorated players in European football in the last 20 or 25 years. It speaks to me that they, for whatever pushback they may be giving people like you and I, Chris, and others who have been criticizing them, they know internally they have problems and that they have to mix it up and shake it up during a tournament. I guess we give them some credit for doing that, but then it also tells us what were they doing in their prep for this tournament. We knew since 2011 they had the rights, and they really went into overdrive in terms of prep for the tournament, starting with the Confederations Cup exactly 12 months ago in Russia. What was going on during those 12 months that they're having to make the two tactical changes, if you will, the equivalent of like the 20th minute of a match? You know, they used two of their three substitutions in the first half of the first half.
Yeah, it's a blessing in disguise that they don't have Lothar Matthäus, because I don't rate him as a good pundit. His English is not good. It's very broken English. Yes, you can understand him, but obviously it's not his first language. He's not that good of a pundit, and they've used him for the Confederations Cup. They've used him before several times, so why? I don't know who's advising them on what talent to bring in.
Chris, in fairness, sorry to cut you off, but he did manage the Russian national team. So I think...
Yeah, but so did Gus Hiddink.
I'm talking about Gus Hiddink. I'm talking about
Lothar Matthäus. No.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just saying, like as far as Lothar, fantastic player, World Cup champion. I mean, as far as a footballer, a lot of respect for. But again, it's almost like they're going for the big names, going for the Hernan Crespos, Lothar Matthäus, and then maybe Gus Hiddink. They're probably thinking in terms of the Russian angle. But they're just going after big names, and we all know that these guys aren't good analysts.
Maybe they picked Lothar Matthäus to annoy Jürgen Klinsmann because they have a legendary feud, and we know that the narrative among a lot of people is to just blame Klinsmann.
So on Wednesday, the first day that they had Martin O'Neill, and I think Tuesday they had Clarence Seedorf, but on Wednesday they had Clarence Seedorf and Martin O'Neill on the set together all day long. They were fantastic, really, really good. And now it's starting to make me think, okay, now I should probably start to watch Fox more. So for me, it's a turning point. Martin O'Neill is brilliant. He's fantastic. He's argumentative, but also he will debate you in a good way. And it's interesting, too, because Moises Munoz, who's been one of Fox's better analysts up until this point, just because the others have been so poor, is now starting to not be as good because he doesn't seem to be... He's not used to having kind of an argumentative debate, which is very much a European style. I mean, they're not being... they're not trying to be negative. They're not trying to start a fight. They're just stating their opinions, and they're pretty blunt about it. And Moises Munoz seems to be taken aback and really doesn't seem to be used to kind of that type of back and forth or standing up for what he thinks, even certain things. Martin O'Neill is fantastic. Clarence Seedorf is really good. But then Wednesday, though, Alexi Lalas wasn't on the set. He took a day off. So with Lalas on the set, it's a different dynamic. I don't think it's as good. And actually, Wednesday without him, I didn't miss him one bit.
So we're obviously not getting ESPN Lalas in this tournament. We're getting Fox Lalas, because I thought coming into the tournament, well, you know, maybe Alexi revert to form where his analysis has never been too deep, right? You're not going to get the level of Taylor Twelman and Kyle Martino analysis you get from Alexi Lalas. He just doesn't view the game in that kind of very tactical way.
I'm sure Lalas was on his debate team in school, in high school or college. He's a good debater. I mean, but give him a big topic like Messi against Ronaldo, and he'll give you a hot take. He'll give you an opinion. But go into a deep dive analysis of tactical setups, he's very, very lacking.
Yeah. So my point was that I thought, if there's the right people around him, what happened at ESPN is you would have the right host, Bob Lee or Mike Tirico, and have the Roberto Martinez's on set or the Michael Bollicks, someone who would push his buttons into giving a hot take, but a hot take that might, that was pretty useful and something that was memorable. But at Fox, there doesn't seem to be that personality. Now, maybe if he's on set with Sadorf and O'Neill, he has that, although he will look incredibly weak in terms of his ability to comprehend what's going on in the tournament compared to those two. That's the disadvantage. But the advantage is maybe you'll get more provocative and useful hot takes from Wallace, as we at ESPN in every major tournament, because there would be someone on set next to him who would push that button properly.
Yeah, definitely. No, I completely agree. It'll just be an interesting dynamic to see, because when Lalas is on the set, he's Rob Stone's go-to guy. You mean he's kind of in that power seat on the far right. Rob Stone's asking that first question to Lalas, which when Lalas wasn't there yesterday, it was Sadov. But it'll be interesting to see how they set up that studio set, which for the Thursday morning one, the early morning for before the Denmark Australia, I missed it, so I didn't get a chance to watch it. But you, the listener, will know by the time you're listening to this how that's set up. But for me too, I mean, if Fox says, okay, you know, I mean, this first week of the World Cup, let's just forget about it and start new with a second week based on this crew, just by bringing in Sadov and Martin O'Neill, it's a completely different picture. It is so much better. There's still issues. Rob Stone, for whatever reason, seems to be fumbling a lot. Doesn't seem to be that comfortable on the set. Seems tired at times. And even some of the pundits, too, on the set, they're forgetting player names. There's a lot of ums and ahs. There's a lot of pauses. It's really, I don't know if it's lack of sleep. I don't know if it's
lack of rotation, maybe, for Rob Stone. I mean, look, ESPN took three studio hosts to South Africa and took three studio hosts to Euro 2016. And Mike Tirico had to leave in the middle because his contract was up, but they had Steve Bauer and Bob Lee the rest of the time. But they had three for much of the tournament. And it seems like I haven't heard anything about a Kate Abdo or an Ian Joy hosting, except in sporadic moments.
Yeah, Kate's been doing more the last few days. So it seems that she's definitely jumping in. But to me, I mean, bring in Ian Joy. I mean, that's somebody that can have that debate, ask those intelligent questions. I'm sure he's very fresh. I mean, has had lots of sleep, lots of rest. Been watching every game, I'm sure, in Russia, but it's hardly been used. So, I mean, part of it probably is ego. Rob Stone wanting to be on the set as much as possible and wanting to be that main figure, and probably wouldn't want Ian Joy to step in for the chance that Ian Joy might do a better job and get more of the limelight. But that's how these, I think, hosts think oftentimes. It's very ego-driven.
And I think the other issue, quite frankly, again, Chris, is the perspective, the broadening of perspective. And this comes from the top. This isn't the fault of – I know people who listen to the show and interact with us on social media want to say, Lalas is a clown, Rob Stone's a clown, this one's a clown, that one's a clown. It appears that way on set. This comes from the top at Fox. I don't think Fox has drilled their talent and on a broader global perspective of this sport, period, compared to the way ESPN used to prepare their talent for 2010 and 2014. And I had the pleasure and privilege of going to Bristol in the lead up to 2010 and 2014. You were with me in 2014 when we went up. I went up in 2010 as well, prior to the World Cup. And there was an institutional commitment at ESPN to drilling all their talent right down to low-level producers offset and all the backroom team about mass perspectives. And we've even gotten this more recently from our conversations with the likes of Taylor Twellman, who have said, if I'm broadcasting a U.S. versus Jamaica game, I better be informing the Jamaican fans as well. Mm-hmm. There has never been that thought process, in my opinion, at Fox, and it reflects in the coverage of the World Cup. So they have built this World Cup with their promotions around stars, Ronaldo, Messi, and whomever Neymar. Else that they choose, Neymar, Salah, until he got injured, right? Mm-hmm. This has been their buildup, which is great when you're talking about that, but they do not have the wider world perspective in general, which is, again, I haven't watched them, but I'm hearing from so many of you that listen to the show who are complaining to me every single day, not just every single day, I'm getting text messages and DMs on the hour about Fox. And it's these sorts of things.
Well, that's the thing, though, Kartik. Their best talent that Fox has is left back in Los Angeles. So they've got Jovan Kovrowski, who's very worldly, knows the game inside and out.
Played in a number of countries.
Right. You've got Keith Costigan. You've got Ian Joy is in Russia, but hardly being used. You've got Eric Winalda, who's still under contract at Fox, who has been not used at all for... we won't get into that, but they have.
I think we kind of all know, right? Yeah. Why he's not going to use. Okay, go ahead.
Right, but they've got talent that's under their umbrella that they have that they could say, hey, it's at this point it's probably too late, but that they could have picked and said, okay, let's go for kind of a stronger, knowledge and have those guys, and then they're good communicators too. But what they've gone for is the entertainment. They've gone for the entertainers. The Rob Stones, the Alexi Lalases of the world, and those types of people. Fernando Fiore is a perfect example.
Wow.
They've gone for the entertainers that are going to try to win over the viewer. So they've gone after the mainstream. And meanwhile, the hardcore freaked out and said, okay, most of the listeners, myself included, you Kartik, most of us have gone to Telemundo. And then the Telemundo, Andres Cantor is a god. There's listening to a game with Andres Cantor commentating, and not even just the goal calls, but just the pacing of the game. Just listening to him is hypnotic, absolutely incredible. And for anyone, there's no way that a John Strong, who is fantastic, or a Stuart Holden, who is very, very good, can compete when Andres Cantor is commentating. And I think myself included, probably a lot of the listeners, have fallen in love with the Telemundo coverage. I can't. Yeah. I don't understand a word they're saying during the analysis at halftime. I can look at the backdrops and look at the people that they're using, that they're bringing in to give their analysis. I don't speak or understand Spanish, so I'm watching a broadcast channel. I'm watching a channel that I don't understand one bit of Spanish, and I'm loving it. Which goes to show how bad Fox's coverage is.
Right. I understand a little more Spanish, so I'm really enjoying it. The one thing I will say, and then this, Fox, it's one of the complaints I had about Fox. The one thing I will say is that Telemundo, it was overkill before and after the Mexico game against Germany.
Yeah.
So their objectivity and their worldliness gets checked at the door when Mexico plays. And I think Contour is a reluctant participant in that. And that comes from above, but I'm considering watching Mexico South Korea on Fox just because of that. But then I know the Lawless angle. I don't want to get too deep into it on this podcast. But if you follow me on Twitter, you probably know I've reported some things about Lawless and Landon Donovan and the whole Mexico angle and the Wasserman agency, etc. I don't know. It's just, I guess you're not going to get objectivity when Mexico's playing on either Telemundo or Fox, but in general, Telemundo has been fantastic. They're worldly. The thing that I love about Contour is, okay, you would think on the Spanish broadcast network, there's an emphasis on the teams in Spanish-speaking countries, which there is when you get to the bumper program. But Contour, he knows his P's and Q's about Croatia, about Denmark, about Japan, about Senegal.
Well, any of the teams.
He just knows football.
Right.
Just knows football.
Yeah. Now, let's get into that, Kartik, for just a minute, because, one more thing about Telemundo is I've enjoyed watching the, when they have the, from the studio in Miami, where it's almost like a variety show, and they have kind of, before the Panama game, they had Panamanian dancers, they had, just...
New Day show, right?
That's the way the gas show.
Yeah,
exactly. And it's entertaining to watch, definitely. It's pretty interesting to watch that. Now, Kartik, you mentioned that you probably will give Fox a chance this weekend for the South Korea-Mexico game. Now, unless Fox changes something, which they've changed a couple of the commentator assignments, the commentators for this the Saturday's game, this Mexico game, is going to be Jorge Perez Navarro and Mariano Trujillo. Would you listen to them, or would you listen to... Which actually, I'll check as you're talking, but would you listen to Telemundo based on that?
No, I think I'll listen to Telemundo based on that. That's the other thing. If they're going to push the L3 angle in English, they might want to get better commentators or people who are maybe perhaps even more objective about the Mexican national team. So this transitions to ESPN. If you've watched ESPN FC during the week, I mean, every day they have Seb Salazar and Hercules Gomez from Russia on the show or on various Sports Center programs where they come on. They're remaining very objective and very grounded about El Tri and about Osorio and about just what their perspective is on the Mexican national team in this tournament, which, again, is kind of the culture of ESPN. And then those two guys, I mean, I think Sebastian Salazar is arguably the best American soccer presenter at this point, who's American and is objective and covers American soccer. But, you know, again, the problem is for Fox, and this is an issue, I guess, in general, if ESPN weren't showing bumper programming, we may not be as critical of Fox. But when I watch an ESPN FC program, Stuart Robson's been on every single night during the World Cup, and also the three previous nights, the starting Monday of the week that the World Cup began, so now almost 2 weeks straight in Bristol. Robson there, Burley there, Steve McManaman has been in and out, but he's done three or four shows. Obviously, Alejandro Moreno, Steve Nichol, were comfortable with both of their analysis. Moreno has got much better in the 5 years that the show's been on air. ESPN FC, and Dan Thomas always pushes the right buttons. You're getting the kind of analysis you do not get on Fox. Throw in the mixer Taylor Twellman, who, and I think we all know, we all feel is our shining star as Americans in terms of analysis. Throw in Taylor Twellman's very frequent appearances on ESPN's mainstream sports show, SportsCenter, Mike Greenberg's show in the morning, a couple of the other talking head shows they have, where he's giving in-depth tactical analysis about matches that you're not getting on Fox. And it makes it that much worse to think about Fox, because perhaps if the ESPN experience, Chris, was in the distant rearview mirror, then we would just roll with what Fox is offering us, even if we don't like it. But for myself, and I know you haven't had this opportunity because of schedules, but so many of the people I'm talking to are doing what I'm doing, watching ESPN Plus to see ESPN FC, and some nights it comes on ESPN 2, and then trying to figure out when Taylor Twellman is on SportsCenter. He's always on the Scott Van Pelt one, which is the 11 p.m. on weeknights, but right. Whichever other shows he pops up on, you're getting that ESPN 2010, 2014, Euro 2016 experience that you're not getting from Fox in their broadcasts.
Yeah, I'm probably one of the rare ones in the United States. I know there's a lot of families and a lot of people have ESPN on all day. That's kind of the yeah. backdrop. I don't have a ESPN on all day, and I'm not a ESPN Plus subscriber yet. I will be probably in the next month before the championship season starts. So for me, I would love to watch the ESPN World Cup edition of SportsCenter. The challenge I've had is the inconsistent times. It was supposed to be on at 5:30 Eastern Time on ESPN 2, and I tuned in probably about four or five times, and it wasn't on. I was like, well, forget that. And then I missed it Wednesday night. I was going to watch it, and then something came up, and I missed it. So for me, it seems to be very random, and I don't have ESPN Plus, so I haven't watched 1 minute of it. I'm sure the coverage is very good. I'm sure it's much better than Fox, but unless they can get a consistent time, it's useless, unfortunately. Going back to the Korea-Mexico game this weekend, Kartik, so on Telemundo, it's going to be Erasmo Provenza and Viviana Avila on the commentating, and then you got the Jorge Perez Navarro and Mariano Trujillo. Let's talk about commentators for a minute, and this is where probably most of the criticism has come in for Fox. Looking at all of the Fox different commentator partnerships that they've had, the one I would say has been the best so far, the most consistent, has been Mark Folwell and Warren Barton, which is a surprise because Warren Barton, up until a few months ago, was just, I mean, oh gosh, pretty bad. I mean, but the last few months of the UEFA Champions League coverage, he's picked up his game. I'm not sure what happened. I mean, if he's been kind of analyzing it a little bit better or trying harder. But Mark Folwell and Warren Barton's the best one of them all. I mean, John Strong and Stuart Holden are very good, but just if John Strong is going to start pulling out, saying stupid stuff, that's a complete turn off for me. Stuart Holden, no problems there for me. as far as the rest of the crew, it's all over the place. I mean, you would think that Derek Ray and Ali Wagner would be a great partnership. Derek Ray, no problem at all. Still, I mean, world-class commentator. Ali Wagner's had some problems with pronunciations of player names. And
most people I've talked to, though, that have watched Fox say that she's been the best analyst.
Yeah, most people, most of the listeners or the feedback we've gotten some really negative feedback about her. So going into the World Cup, I'd say, yeah, she is strong, but there's been some
growing pains. How much of that is just discomfort with having a woman on the mic, though? I mean, you know, I don't trust...
I don't trust people's
opinions when it's a woman, because there's a lot of manliness with some lot of chauvinism in the sport.
That's part of it too. Definitely, there's been some of that. But taking that out completely and not looking at that part of at all. Just looking at the ones that have been more kind of just honest feedback. The honest feedback seems to be that mispronunciations of names Dele Alli or other players. Some basic mistakes. So, but let's dive into that for a minute, though, Kartik. It's just some of the feedback from the listeners to the podcast. Let's start off with Strauss fan, which I think is Astros fan, but Strauss fan. He says Rob Stone seems clueless on what event he is covering. AJ Cabrera, his low has been preferring to watch the matches on mute due to the poor commentary. Frank Poultry says Tony Miola has been his low, trying to be Troy Aikman. Steve Stupka through Facebook says, "Hey, I love the podcast. One comment on ESPN Plus. I don't mind the spoiler scores for games in progress, but I've made an effort not to watch a game and want to catch the replay the next day. I don't want the score to be the first thing I see, at least for 48 hours or so. It's okay to know who Luke's father is, but not to know who won the game the night before if you want to watch a replay." So that would be just talking about ESPN Plus in general.
Yeah, and my comment last week that I enjoyed the fact that with the MLS Live being integrated into ESPN Plus, they give the scores, and I'm able to jump around knowing what's going on in each game when I'm on the main interface. But I put it out there on Twitter, and a lot of people agree with Steve. They'd rather not know the score, and they'd rather watch the game fresh the next day on demand, which is something you get with ESPN Plus as well. I mean, the games are archived for, I'm not sure how long, but they're there for a few days at least.
Jag posted this on the World Soccer Talk website. Dear Fox World Cup team, please, please, please show the game with stadium sound only, as I'm unable to tolerate the nonsense commentary. The only exception has been JP and Derek Ray. Did you seriously think that providing the American sport terminology such as restart and turnover would actually qualify as a good job? Well, here's the news, nowhere close. Just shut the commentary off and provide stadium sound. Tyler Dennis on Twitter says, Kelly Smith is such a better analyst than Alexi Lalas. After Lalas throws out his generalities, Kane's price increasing and then fumbling thought, she steps in with quality points about Harry Kane's technical and tactical abilities. And then we've got a few more comments. Tim Keane says, I watch mostly Premier League coverage and some ESPN games, and guess I've been spoiled by the commentators. Watching so far, I find the Perez-Navarro and Trujillo combination extremely irritating and overwhelmingly biased towards the South American teams. Brett Engstrom says, I'm watching Denmark against Peru, great broadcast, except they had to turn the volume down. Jorge Perez-Navarro's awful on English broadcast. Please, no more. And then Mike Camerata says, I listen to your podcast, and you're not a big fan of Fox commentators, nor am I. Fox has been good for the most part. There's been two calls that stand out to me. Number one, the Fox commentator that said that Iceland beat Argentina, which was a draw. Number two, the goal by Diego Costa for Spain against Portugal, where VAR was used for a possible interference by him on Pepe. The Fox commentator said there was definitely a foul, while ESPN called it right in that Pepe used some theatrics when elbowed. And last but not least, SLC Runner says, I always love Chris and Kartik's banter. Best part of World Cup coverage post-game is ESPN FC, that we all agree. So that's the thing, Kartik, with the commentating, it's been all over the place. I mean, the Jorge Perez Navarro and Mariano Trujillo, we knew what we would get, which is in sound bites, it's actually interesting. Their English has gotten better, but it's still pretty bad. So it's entertainment. It's really not commentary. Mariano Trujillo, I like a lot. He seems authentic, seems genuine. He's just sharing his thoughts.
He seems like he's better in the studio though, right? Than as a co-commentator.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's I can't remember which one he did recently in the studio, and he wasn't the greatest. I mean, so again, English is not his first language, so it doesn't come as naturally to him. And I think he was put on the spot and didn't do that well. But I don't know. He seems okay. Perez Navarro is kind of almost a Andres Cantor imitator in some ways, but in English and not as good. So I don't know. It is what it is with that one. But
yeah.
Tony Meola, Tony Meola. I mean, the reference was from Frank Poultry saying that he's like Troy Aikman. But again, Tony's seems like a nice guy. He's a great goalkeeping legend. I mean, I have a lot of time for him. But that's supposed to be... I mean, that's only one of two guys from the co-commentators that are in Russia from Fox. And is he really the best? The second best? I don't think so. JP is JP. I think he's a little bit overrated. He's definitely good, but he's more of a radio commentator. So from the commentating side of things... It hasn't been good either.
And, so it's basically Falwell and Ray have been good. Is what you're saying?
Yeah, on the lead commentators, and then Warren Barton. Yeah, and Warren Barton's been good on the co-com, and Stuart Holden have been good, and that's about it.
Yeah, Mark Falwell has grown on me over the course of I guess now 3 years. But he's been calling soccer, originally a basketball announcer. I think he's quite good, but again, like Derek Ray. Let's get back to this. Falwell and Derek Ray are in Los Angeles calling games off of the monitor. So as good as they are, they could be that much better if they were at the games. And the Nat sound that's turned down, there were a couple comments about that. This is something people are also complaining about, that they say when they watch Telemundo, they're hearing the natural sound piped in at the right level to balance the commentators. What they're hearing on Fox... is it turned all the way down. Now, again, I haven't watched Fox. I can't attest to this, but I've heard this from multiple people.
Yeah, it almost sounds like when they have the commentators from Los Angeles, is they're trying to turn the natural sound up to try to get that balance where it feels like the commentators are actually at the stadium, even though they're in Los Angeles in a studio. But it does sound different than the sound coming from kind of the commentators, like a John Strong or JP at the stadium. But at the end of the day, to me, there's three factors that have been turning me to Telemundo. One has been the commentators, so Andres Cantor and the others. And then again, I don't understand what they're saying, but the commentating, sounds better. It sounds more authentic. The second thing would be the actual analysis, and up until the first week on Fox, it's been poor. So I said, okay, forget that. Let me just switch over to Telemundo. But the third thing is, one of the most important things, is that Telemundo's games are about anywhere from 20 to 30 seconds ahead of Fox.
Yeah. Okay, so let me say this, Chris. In my office, one of the days I asked for the TVs to be switched, we left one of the TVs on Fox and the other on Telemundo, right next to each other. I would say it was 20 to 25 seconds ahead. I'm trying to remember which match this was. I want to say this was...
I know the opening game was like 30 seconds.
Yeah, no, this was more recently. This was on Monday. Whichever match it was, that it was 20 or 25 seconds, and they were right next to each other. And it was the same feed, because it was the same, the very same angle you saw on Telemundo 20 seconds earlier you would see on Fox. So it wasn't that they had different camera angles or any of that. It was just behind.
Yeah, yeah. So those are the three reasons that Telemundo is better to watch. It sounds better, the analysis is better, and it's actually 20 to 30 seconds ahead. So you'll know who scores that goal 20 to seconds before anyone on Fox is going to know it. But having said that, after all this, bring in Clarence Seedorf and Martin O'Neill, and it's got me watching Fox more. And at least I'll give it more of a chance. Now, Martin O'Neill also is working for ITV. Clarence Seedorf, I believe, is just probably only for Fox. So it all depends in terms of...
He's worked with British television before, though.
Yeah, he's worked with the BBC before. So it all depends, you mean, how much they're going to be using these guys, as well as, you mean, the rest of the crew. So I'll give him another chance. I mean, this could be something that could win me back and have me watching Fox for the rest of the broadcast, the rest of the World Cup.
Martin O'Neill is very confrontational on set, and I've seen that. Like I said, I was watching a clip from ITV just last week, lead up to the World Cup, where he was he went after Cannavaro and whoever else was in studio. I think the other person in studio was English, but he is that way. And as I said, that's why he didn't get the England job 12 years ago. When the job went and he was the front runner to get the job, is his style. So that's going to win over a lot of people. And then Seedorf is just smart, right? He's very analytical in the way he looks at the game. Just think about the kind of player he was, you know, sitting in that number six or number eight role, leading play, seeing the whole field. Really one of the great players of his generation in European football. Won so many Champions Leagues. Always been on elite teams. His analysis reflects that. So I have to say, I am going to watch some Fox just because of those two guys. I want to know when those two guys are on. I don't want to turn on Studio Show and not see Seedorf and see some clown head. But I'm going to try and watch some of them and hopefully catch Seedorf and Martin O'Neill.
Having said that, Kartik, I must say that the production from Fox has been poor. Not the look and feel, which has been great, but the actual post match. So post match, so many things have happened. For example, the Brazil Switzerland game. You mean the goal that Switzerland scored, was that a foul? You mean obviously the referee didn't think so, but the analysis. So for that game, I watched ITV from the UK. And it was fantastic. As soon as the game was over, they did a very quick highlights, and then within 30 seconds, they jumped right in and said, "Okay, Gary Neville, what do you think about Switzerland's goal? Should it have stood?" And he went through the whole. I mean, within seconds, nope, shouldn't have been a goal. They should have used VAR. Why wasn't VAR used? And really scrutinized that incident. But for so many of the other games too, there was the Amrabat concussion in the Morocco game. Post-match wasn't discussed at all. There was the fourth goal for Russia in the opening game. Post-match right away wasn't discussed at all. It's almost as if these things didn't happen. It's almost as if they're so formulaic that they'll do the match, do the post-match highlights, which anyone can do, and then move right on to the next game. There's no time. They have the time, but they're not choosing to actually spend some time on it, on key incidents in the game. And that's the things that soccer fans want to hear. They want to hear the analysis. They don't want to hear just talking heads. The reason those talking heads are there are to analyze what happened, to give some context, to give some observations, to give some analysis and experience, and say, okay, in the game, the England game against Tunisia, and Kyle Walker, you mean, in terms of the, with his back standing, you mean, but basically he was turned around. So for that one, I think, which I watched BBC, and it was Rio Ferdinand that went in and discussed Kyle Walker's defending and the mistakes he made. And then looking at, again, looking a lot more closely at VAR. So VAR has been more of a hotter topic in the UK, more of a focus, more that they've really kind of dived big time into that to find out what's going on. Why is it not, you know, all these rugby tackles you're seeing in games? Why isn't VAR being used for things like that? And on Fox, up until now, there's been really no deep dive on that. None that I've seen. So even changing a couple of people on the studio set is going to help things, but it's not going to fix things. So they really need to focus on what's important. And that's the same thing for a mainstream fan as for a soccer fan. They want to know why, and we're not getting the why from Fox.
Yeah.
All right, Kartik. Let's move on. Let's talk about TV streaming news. I'll have you kick it off.
Yeah, the World Cup has been generating impressive TV viewing numbers across the globe. No surprise there. England, Tunisia on British TV averaged 13.7 million viewers on BBC One. Germany, Mexico on German TV had 26 million viewers on TV channel ZDF. And France had 12.6 million viewers for France, Australia on TF1. The Japan-Colombia match on Japanese television had a household rating of 48.7, peaking at 55.4 toward the end of the match when Japan wrapped up the victory. And Japan is not a football country. Let's keep that in mind when people this goes back to Lawless's stupid comment 2 weeks ago about the U.S. being the country that's advanced the most in the last 30 years in this sport. No comparison to anyone, and I just answered with one word for Lawless: Japan. And it kicked off this debate. Japan has similar challenges in terms of their fans and their fan base in that country versus what we have in the United States. Very similar situation. 48.7 rating. Think about that, Chris.
Wow. Well, the other one too that I forgot to mention is Iceland. And Iceland had a 94 rating, meaning that of the TV sets in Iceland, 94% of them were tuned in to watch the Iceland-Argentina game. Actually, no, it was 96%.
99, I think.
It was a huge number. And people were asking, like, well, what happened to the other 4 to 6%? Yeah, like, what were they watching?
People not watching it, right?
Watching a fishing channel or something? I don't know. Meanwhile, in Australia, soccer fans down under have been freaking out due to the legal streaming service crashing during the first few days of the tournament. It was so bad that Australian company Optus Sport allowed TV broadcaster SBS to stream games until the streaming issues could be fixed. So, sorry for you guys down under, but hopefully things will be better now.
In a story from the USA Today this week, journalist Mark Rogers reported that Alexi Lalas was confronted by an aggressive and angry fan in Moscow. According to the report, Lalas was shaken up. It was aggressive behavior that went way beyond what someone in his position might usually expect, was the quote.
Yeah, as far as I know, he's okay. He's fine. And that's the thing, too. Actually, Fox, in one of the interviews that they did before the World Cup, talked about that each of the Fox crew would have security detail that would be following them around. So it's awful to hear about, an aggressive, angry fan confronting him and Lalas being shaken up about it. So hopefully that's just an isolated incident, and hopefully nothing like that happens again. On the TV ratings side, so we've got all of the numbers at worldsoccertalk.com for the World Cup, including a side-by-side comparison between Telemundo and Fox Sports. So far for this World Cup, up until I think the first 6 days, actually 5 days I think it was, the first 5 days of the tournament, Telemundo is beating Fox, even though that Telemundo is in 65 million homes. Fox, the over-the-air network, is in 116,000, so almost double. But then FS1, even FS1 is in, I think, 84 million homes compared to the, I think, the 65 million homes that Telemundo is in. So Fox has the advantage in terms of having it, the channels in more, a lot more homes than Telemundo, but Telemundo, in terms of the average number of fans per game on television and the total number of fans, so far it's Telemundo. Part of the reason is Mexico. And if Mexico goes deep in this tournament, that's going to be a slam dunk for Telemundo, so I'm sure they're hoping for that. 11 million people tuned in across FS1 and Telemundo to watch Mexico against Germany on Sunday. I watched that game on, I think it was on Telemundo, but 11 million, which is actually a big number. That's a huge number, and congratulations there to Mexico on that win. It was a great game also. And then just one more. I won't go into all of them, but for the Brazil-Switzerland game, which was after that one on Mexico-Germany, on Sunday that one had 8.4 million, and that was on FS1, Telemundo, and NBCSN in Spanish. The NBCSN game, I think for that one had, I think it was 160,000 viewers. Not a huge number, but definitely helps Telemundo in their battle against Fox to have more viewership. Listener mailbag. We went through most of those feedback and comments in the first segments. Let me just scroll through that real fast and see if there was anything else. I think that was about it on the comments side. So, yeah. So, listeners, if you do have any feedback, questions, advice, rants, raves, you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. And plus, of course, you can always post comments on the main website, worldsoccertalk.com. We will continue to be back on a weekly basis, providing our analysis and thoughts and observations about the television coverage. So far, the first week of Fox has been abysmal. The second week, I'm hoping for much greater improvements. Telemundo has been fantastic. The BBC and ITV have been brilliant. And Univision, I think I watched on the opening day during the halftime commercial show. That was interesting. And ESPN, I'm hoping to watch this week to catch some of those ESPN SportsCenter World Cup edition analysis. The interesting thing about that, Kartik, there's no highlights. And Fox has not allowed ESPN.
Yes.
ESPN would have asked Fox to say, hey, can we have your permission to go ahead and show highlights? Do you remember from the last World Cup? Did Fox?
ESPN gave Fox highlights in the last World Cup. And one of my sources at ESPN said they're getting 10 to 25% of what they gave last time.
Oh, so they are getting some highlights?
Some. But, again, it's like the highlights BN makes available for La Liga games. So you're getting 10 or 25% of what you request. So you're getting, let's say you're doing five different shows. Only one of them will have highlights. ESPN FC, the last 4 or 5 days, have had no highlights. They started after they were getting highlights with still images. Then now they just cut that out, and it's a half an hour of analysis, and it's been quite good. It's actually... if anything, it's made even guys like Stuart Robson better because they're being even sharper with their analysis and they have more time to accentuate their points because there's no highlights.
Yeah, sharper is a good word for that too, Carter, because that's what we're missing is that sharp analysis. And to me, actually, the timing of ESPN's show, so, I mean, it's 6 hours of soccer a day just in games alone. And so by mid to late afternoon, you know, four-ish or so, okay, with Fox, you kind of getting tired of that, you want to take a break. And ESPN's timing, if they can get a 5:30 ESPN2 SportsCenter World Cup edition on every night consistently, I think that's perfect timing. It gives a chance to take a break, you know, have a snack, do whatever you want to do, and then watch that. Because in order to wait until, 10:30, 11 o'clock, midnight for the Fernando Fiore freak show, it's not worth it. You mean by that point, it's like okay, the day's over, especially on the East Coast. So
you have Taylor Twellman on with Scott Van Pelt. Generally, now the issue with ESPN, obviously, always is that they have live events that bleed into the SportsCenter programming, so it gets pushed back and preempted. And those of us that are soccer fans that don't follow some of these other sports, you and I both kind of unaware of what's going on sometimes, and get stunned when we set the DVR and the thing doesn't tape and it's taping the baseball game instead. But that happened yesterday, by the way, with the ESPN FC Russia edition. But generally, the Sports Center at 11 o'clock with Scott Van Pelt, Taylor Twellman will be on. Generally, Taylor will be on a show in the morning on ESPN, one of their talking head shows. Generally, there will be either a Sports Center or an ESPN FC show 5:30 or whenever they're permitted based on live programming bleeding in, but late afternoon, early evening. So those are generalities. You can't necessarily sit there and watch by it, but ESPN is more or less in those time frames offering alternatives to what you're getting on Fox.
Definitely good to know that, Kartik. And of ESPN Deportes, I haven't watched, and beIN Sports, I haven't watched. And I'm sure that they have coverage too in terms of some analysis. Maybe some highlights also, perhaps. I'm not sure, but there's some other options too to consider. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. Plus, you can talk to it from your Google Home and say, hey, Google, play the World Soccer Talk podcast. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, going into the second week of the World Cup, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.